Today, part two of our interview with Russell Means, American Indian Movement activist, computer programmer, actor, and author of Where White Men Fear to Tread. Russell, one of the questions I wanted to ask you last time was about your, well, one could say incredible luck, or you could put it a different way, the magic of an Indian medicine man, but you've been shot a couple of times, you've been stabbed, and it's almost as if you talk in the book about how you have no vital organs. You know what, I'd like you to tell the story about how you were prepared for being shot the first time, and how that, in a sense, protected you.
Well, it was in, actually, the July 4th celebration in Porcupine, when I got my third name, by the way, Oyati Wachimpi, which means, roughly translated in English, means work for the people. And that was in 1972, and I got this information from some women who came down from another part of the reservation that there was a medicine man there who had had a ceremony and said that I was going to be shot. And they were going to, you know, they had a ceremony to have me shot or something like that. At any rate, that worried me. So I went to the local medicine man, Alfonso Whiteshield, there in Porcupine, South Dakota, on my reservation, Pine Ridge. And he took me up for a ceremony. And he's one of the few, he's the only holy man that I knew whose medicine came from the day. His power came from the day. He didn't have his ceremonies at night. He had his ceremonies in the daytime, right in broad daylight.
Like the sun dances in broad daylight.
Exactly. Right. And so we went and had a little ceremony. Make a long story short, he told me where I was going to be shot, and he even sucked on my back. And he said, and he spit out something onto the ground. And he said, okay, that's okay. He said, you're going to be all right. Well, 3 years later, I was shot in the very place where he sucked on. And I was okay. It was a .357 they shot me with. And it went in, made a U-turn and came out. And it's like miraculous. And I was shot by a Bureau of Indian Affairs policeman on the Standing Rock Sioux Indian Reservation.
And he exclaimed, I got Russell Means, I got Russell Means, as if you were a trophy.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So, yeah, I've suffered through 9 assassination attempts, 5 in the United States and 4 in Nicaragua.
Are these over, or do you expect, you think that
they're... Well, you know, I'm like my father, you know. When it's my time to go, it's my time to go. I'm not going to worry about it. Yeah. And that's the way I've always felt.
You know, Mount Rushmore features 4 respected American presidents, but their treatment of Indians would suggest that they leave a lot to be desired. Maybe you can give us a quick history lesson about Washington, Jefferson, and the other folks.
Mount Rushmore, the shrine of hypocrisy. Oh, excuse me. I mean the shrine of democracy. That's what the government calls it. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, and Teddy Roosevelt. Well, in capsule form, the Indian name the Eastern Indians gave to George Washington prior to the formation of the United States of America, he was known as, translated into English, as Village Destroyer. In the name of King George and the Crown of England, he would attack and massacre Indian villages. That's how he got his rep as a military man. So that's aside from owning slaves, of course, and having a lot of children from slaves. The second man was also a slave owner and also had children from slaves. But he of course, he had, among many other things, but the highlight of his anti-Indian sentiment he wrote about, and he said the solution to the, quote, Indian problem, unquote, is complete annihilation. That was his solution. Abraham Lincoln hung 38 Sioux Indians, indiscriminately chosen, without a hearing, hung him without a hearing, and signed the order to hang him 2 days after he signed the Emancipation Proclamation. Great man, huh? The fourth man, we saw Abraham Lincoln is also the one who put the military-industrial complex together in order to succeed in the Civil War. That's how the military-industrial complex started. He's the architect. Then after he formed it, he warned the people about it, just like Eisenhower. At any rate, the fourth guy, Teddy Roosevelt, was the biggest thief ever to occupy the White House. You know, in violation of the U.S. Constitution and treaty law, he nationalized our lands. Called them national forests, national parks, national monuments. Stole our land.
Many places that were shrines, very, very holy places.
Excuse me, yes. So that's why we call it the Shrine of Hypocrisy.
You know, Eurocentric history is taught through books, but it's an oral tradition that you've been able to get this information, I imagine, and other information about the Indian perspective on different things, including the Indian perspective on Custer, which, when I read the book, it was news to me that the Indians didn't kill Custer, he killed himself. Maybe you could tell that story.
Well, yeah, my grandmother. Whose grandmother? Her mother, grandma, I forget now, was there. And she told me how he died. Because he was, like George Washington, a village destroyer, we had no respect for him as a man, because he would kill women and children and old people. You know, essentially defenseless people. And so to us, that's a human being that is not worthy of being a human being. And therefore, it would be a dishonor to kill him, to touch him, to even touch him.
Why would that be?
Because he was a dishonorable man. And there would be there's no honor in killing any living being to an Indian. That's why we have ceremony and we give thanks and we ask for forgiveness. Whenever we go after a teepee pole, or anything, you know, chop down a tree or go hunting or everything, we have those ceremonies of renewal and understanding that and how what the cycle means and the circle, the sacred circle of life, and all of that, which is, we don't have time to get into right now, but the point is, he was not worthy of killing or touching. You know, that was the thing. No one wanted to pay attention to him. So let him go. Let the vermin go back to his people, you know, let them deal with him. You know, that's going to be their burden. Well, and in order to speed him on his way, the women start chasing him, banging on whatever they had and yelling. And I guess he looked back and he thought the entire Sioux Nation was after him, so he blew his brains out.
End of story. Yeah. Until it gets twisted and commemorated at the site, and you've had a couple of different accounts in the book of some demonstrations that you've had there. Did they ever put a marker signifying the death of Indian people there or at any place?
No, we demonstrated, and finally we put our own monument up to Indian people who were defending their families at that site. And now there's a national competition to choose a design that the Park Service is willing to put up. But guess who has to pay for it? And rightly so. We're paying for it. Indian people.
Maybe Disney could kick in a few bucks.
Hey, good thought. Good thought. I want to say something about Disney. And in that, he has contributed. I'm working with one of their charities. Disney broke a cardinal rule of theirs, and they allowed two benefits to benefit Indian communities. Two benefit showings, screenings, as they call in the business, two screenings of Pocahontas before it was released. That was in Denver and in Tulsa, all right? So yes, Indian people have benefited. Also, there is an artist school in Pasadena, California, that I'm working with, that's affiliated with Disney, one of Disney charities, excuse me, that are going to be schooling and bringing in Indian artists from reservations, not urban areas, the reservations, to enhance them and get them into the art of animated animation. Okay, so that's another thing he's doing, or they are doing at Disney.
You know, there's a kind of amusing passage in the book that you were taken in by some interrogators, BIA police or FBI, I'm not sure exactly who, but you told them you were being aided by the Great Mystery. And they're like, okay, who is this guy, this Great Mystery guy? And you were trying to explain to them, and it's comical in a sense, but of course they were also beating the crap out of you, so that wasn't humorous, but maybe you can reconstruct that story.
Well, it was humorous to me, even while they were beating me. You know, I couldn't believe their stupidity, but yeah, I told them AIM was aided by the Great Mystery, and they thought that was a code name for, I don't know, maybe Communist China or Communist Russia or joint them. We were accused of bringing them together, in fact. In our wounded knee trial, something that the world couldn't do, and even they themselves couldn't do. But AIM brought them together at wounded knee. You know, that was amazing. So, it's the FBI and people who are not knowledgeable of Indian affairs. It's amazing what they'll believe.